Blog Talk Radio.
Our game is like a boxing match. We are like two heavyweight, you know, boxers in the ring. You're going to give a blow, but you're going to take one, and you got to give one back. And you just got to stay on your feet until you can get that knockout punch.
Hey, you guys, this is Carlos Torres, Major League Baseball player, and I've been around a lot of gloves in my life and my days. And I tell you what, go to VinciPro.com to check out real quality. Best leather, best craftsmanship, everything all together, the whole package. Go to VinciPro.com.
If you drink a Yoo-Hoo and you don't like it, I will give you your money back.
And now it's time for your host, Jarrett Rogel.
And welcome, everybody. This is TCRS, the Coach Rose Show. Of course, I'm the coach, Jarrett Rogel, and we are coming to you today for the first time from our brand new studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I had to get out of St. Louis, Missouri, move out here to Myrtle Beach. Great location. On today's show, we will be talking about the upcoming NFC Hall of Fame induction ceremony, which will take place a week from this Friday. And today's guest, who is on the line with me right now, will be inducted into the NFC Hall of Fame on Friday, December 9th, in the Pioneer category, the head softball coach from Michigan State University, head coach Jackie Joseph. Coach, welcome in.
Hey, thanks. I'm sorry I couldn't join you on site. That would be much better. Although I will tell you, it's 56 degrees here today. It was 59 here yesterday. It's been unbelievably warm this fall.
Well, I think it was about 65 this morning when I checked, and that was about 5:30, 6 o'clock. So
it has been
very nice. Pretty foggy outside right now. But, Coach, let's jump right into this. A lot to get to. You know, when people first, and a lot of times when people find out and get that call that they're going into a Hall of Fame, and especially one is separated into categories like the NFCA Hall of Fame is, they always want to see what other passing inductees there have been in their category, and so many, obviously, in the NFCA Hall of Fame Pioneer category. But when you look specifically at Big Ten coaches, you have Sharon Drysdale, Gail Blevins, Carol Hutchins, and then your collegiate coach from Central Michigan. When you look at just that group alone, what comes to mind and what stands out when you look at that group?
Well, you know, when you immediately just feel like you're just not worthy. I mean, you just, when you think about the people that are in the Hall of Fame, it's just overwhelming. It's so humbling. It's all those cliches, but it's just so true. I mean, not in my wildest dreams. You know what I mean? And so you're just sort of blown away and awestruck by it all. And It's just really awesome because those are all people I've always looked up to. You know, when I got into this conference, you know, in the Big Ten alone, you know, you had Linda Wells and Gail Blevins and Sharon Drysdale and then, of course, Carol Hutchins. And Carol's sort of our most senior member. But, I mean, these are pretty weighty people. And then just the rest of it. So it's mind-blowing, really.
And not all of them, of course, in the Pioneer category, but all of them are in the NFCA Hall of Fame. Coach, another thing that you have to look at, and really when you're talking about Hall of Fame, yes, it's about what you do on the field, but one of the biggest and most satisfying things has to be that when you're put into a Hall of Fame like this, where it really is your peers putting you in, the fact that they realize that you more so have been a great mentor in converting young girls into women that can be really successful members in our society. What does that feel like?
Well, that's the ultimate payoff, if you will. When you choose a profession like coaching, the ultimate payoff is watching them and knowing how well they're all doing in life. You know, every one of your players, you know, goes off and does great things, and then they touch so many people and so on. And it's, that really is, you know, when you're in the middle of the season and, you know, you're sort of in the thick of it, you lose sight of of what really is important. And in this profession, for me anyway, yes, we want to win every single game we play, but it really is about, you know, growing people up and watching them develop the skills that are necessary for successful life. No matter what they choose, they're going to have the tools and the skill set to be successful. And really, that's really what it has to be about. I mean, certainly there are people who lose sight of that in the moment and think that it is about just winning the game, whatever that sport might be. But when you choose collegiate coaching, the mission is education. And I don't care what anybody tells you about it's a business and it's a business and yet yada yada. It's not. This is an industry about education. And while there are other components of it, certainly making money is important. Certainly winning all your games are important. That's not the mission. Those are the goals. And there's a difference.
You've already been inducted into a couple other Hall of Fame. So I'll ask you this question. The first time you were able to put HOF next to your signature, what was that like? And for people that may be getting inducted into a Hall of Fame in the future for the first time, what would you tell them about that? Is that when it really touches that you've been inducted?
This is so silly. You're silly, okay? I would never write HOF next to my name. I mean, that's just, you know what I mean? It's like, that's just not really, you know, who I am. That would be like really odd for me. But the first Hall of Fame was my high school. And I will tell you, it is as humbling. It was as humbling then. It was amazing and overwhelming to get to go into your high school Hall of Fame when you come from an area like I come from, you know, in Flint, where you have the most amazing, you know, people and athletes have come out of that area and that city and even my school. So that was awesome. And then to go in as a team is even different and as special, you know, going in as a team at my alma mater, Central Michigan. And then this is the ultimate, you know, because I've chosen this life you choose a profession, and so it's what you've dedicated your life's work to. And so it's really even a whole nother level. But I doubt I'll ever reference it. I mean, people bring it up, obviously, when you get paid to speak, and, you know, it's important that you have credibility, I guess. Which is great, and my staff makes pretty good fun of it. You know, they chant sometimes, which is funny when I do something. But it's just, you know, it's not why I think most people, they don't get into it hoping they're going to get something like this. This is just sort of what happens, you know, if you're just super fortunate and blessed, which I've been.
So 28 seasons as a head coach, entering your 29th, lots of softball in those 28 years. What moments, if you could pick a couple moments, what moments really stand out and mean the most to you during that time?
Well, I think for sure, like getting that first head coaching job. I mean, I remember, you know, how many times I got no, how many interviews I went on and how many jobs I applied for and got no before I forgot that first job. You know, so you're always grateful to this. For me, it's Bowling Green State University in Ohio, that first opportunity to become a head coach. And then that first championship, you know, is always special, you know, at Bowling Green. And then, you know, then certainly winning the Big Ten tournament up here 1 year and going from an 8 seed to beating Michigan and then beating Northwestern and Illinois to get into the NCAAs in a year you didn't think you were going to go. You know, and then there's like regional games, like regional NCAA games that you didn't think you were supposed, you know, you weren't supposed to win. We beat A&M, we beat Oregon. I mean, big games like that you sort of remember. But, you know, for me, I love game day. I've always loved game day. And I think that's what's kept me in it for so long is just game day and the game. I love the game. But in terms of this opportunity experience, I'm going in not so much because I've won games or lost games, but because I've always been able to see a bigger picture about where the sport could go and how we could position ourselves so that we experience success that we're experiencing now with regard to television and just serving on various committees and things to position the sport to grow. And, you know, so it's really, those are also very rewarding opportunities, you know, to get to sit on the NCAA softball committee and to get to be in the room when major decisions are made about the game. You know, do you bring fences in? Do you move the mound? Do you change the ball? Do you restructure regionals? Do you, you know, change formats at the World Series? You know, what do you fight for and why? And how much time do you spend with TV people? And what can you give them to help them do their job better? You know, those are, there have been a lot of changes in our game, you know, when it comes to advancing. And it certainly isn't one person. It's groups and tons of people. You know, the rules people who change the specs on the bats, the rules people who change the specs on the ball, et cetera, et cetera. All of the things that people love about the game today that wasn't true about the game before. So those are some of the things I really enjoyed.
Coach, let me ask you this to piggyback off of that answer there. Biggest rule change over these last 29 seasons that has affected the game of softball the most on the college level?
Well, in the beginning, there were major fights in terms of who gets to go to regionals and how regionals are structured. And I will point to one thing that I think is the reason softball is where it is today and college baseball is where it is today and some of the other sports that are regional, not national. And that was a decision that said you must keep regions in regions, meaning that the Northeast needed to host a regional. And the Southwest, that combined with the absolute war that went on during the Clinton administration to add sports, specifically add softball. So let's take these two things separately. Remember, not that long ago, the SEC didn't sponsor softball, and fast pitch wasn't played anywhere south of Columbus, Ohio, on the East Coast, and really east of Texas. So all of the SEC footprint didn't exist for fast pitch. You had one random team. South Carolina was the only school playing fast pitch softball. And our first executive director, the first full-time one, Rayle Allison, she set out to make sure that schools added that sport specifically. And that was a full-on assault to make sure that Title IX was defended, and that it was, and that when schools realized they were gonna lose lawsuits, that they chose softball to be the sport that they added. That, and the fact that we insisted that regionals remain in regions. So, for example, we had to incentivize athletic directors wanting to invest in a sport. And they were not going to invest in a sport they didn't have access to the championship in. So if you didn't think that your team could ever make it to regionals or the College World Series, why would you invest in that sport? So those two things combined, I think, really made sure that the sport remained national. Now, the last, I don't know how many years it was, the championships cabinet passed a rule that said if you were a top 16 seed, you must host. You must have the opportunity to host if you bid. And that was a disastrous. That's been disastrous for our sport, in my opinion, because now you have underrepresentation in regions. And that wasn't something that came from softball. That was something that came down for all sports across the board. So that's been a difficult thing, and frankly, as I sit here, I don't know where we are with reversing that decision for our sport, because it's different if you play inside whether you play outside. That makes a massive difference in terms of sports, especially in a sport like ours where we think February is spring, which is ridiculous. So anyway, those are some of the things that are always being fought and planned and plotted and designed behind the scenes by, like I said, a lot of people.
Oh, as I mentioned, you're going in the pioneer category, which honors NFCA members who have contributed to the sport through service, leadership, participation, and or coaching, and exhibits high professional standards of ethics, integrity, sportsmanship, and honesty. Kind of go through a little bit of those and how those shape the way that you are as a coach.
Well, I think that, you know, for me, those things all came first, like the fact that there's an award for, I think, for people that I think are just simply doing things the right way is pretty, pretty cool. I mean, it's not like I sit down and say to myself, you know, I'm going to go do some things so that I, you know, am demonstrating integrity. It's just sort of like, and you know this just from meeting people, you just are who you are. I was just super, super blessed to be born to a set of parents who were just amazing people. And I was raised in an amazing time at the growth of the sport. You know, it's not that a lot of people don't exhibit the same things they do. It's just that I was blessed with opportunity at the ground floor. You know, it's the coaching association was like 20 people when I got started. You know, and so sometimes people have opportunities that you get in on a business, let's say, when it's first starting. And, you know, and that's what happened for me. I was in the right place at the right time with, I think, just a skill set that that I was just raised with. And so that's just sort of how it evolved. I mean, you know, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people who exhibit all of the same skills. It's just sometimes, you know, now the, you know, the group is, you know, 5,000 people, and that's just the members. But certainly there are, you know, four times that, you know, people coaching softball at different levels. But collegiately, you know, I was in at the right time, right place, right time with the right mentors helping me. And, you know, it's just been awesome.
We're going to take a 30-second break. We're going to come back on the other side and get into a little bit of a preview of how your team looks for the 2017 season, if that's all right with you, Coach.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
That game is like a boxing match. We are like two heavyweight, you know, boxers in the ring. You're going to give a blow, but you're going to take one, and you got to give one back. And you just got to stay on your feet until you can get that knockout punch.
Hey, you guys, this is Carlos Torres, Major League Baseball player, and I've been around a lot of gloves in my life and my days. And I tell you what, go to VinciPro.com to check out real quality. Best leather, best craftsmanship, everything all together, the whole package. Go to VinciPro.com.
If you drink a Yoo-Hoo and you don't like it, I will give you your money back.
And now it's time for your host, Jared Rogel.
And we're back here live on TCRS, the Coach Roadshow, talking with Michigan State University head softball coach Jackie Joseph. And, Coach, let's talk now a little bit about your team. You know, after this fall, what is the biggest improvement your team made this fall that is going to, you really feel, prepare them well for this coming season?
Well, I'd say I couldn't be more excited about this spring because, number one, we have so much coming back from last year's team that I thought really took a huge step in two categories, both on the mound and offensively. We have Christina Zaleski returning from last year. Big, strong power pitcher, hit 70 on the gun many times. Really came into her own the last 3 weeks of the season. You know, and then, you know, we've just been able to, when that season ended, you can always tell, you know, based on the reaction of your team when you lose a game that we thought we should have won, and we lost a game we took a two-run lead into the seventh and lost to Illinois. The kids were so devastated. And so I think that really launched us into the summer, the way they prepared, the way they came in for the fall. We have more depth on the mound. In addition to Z, we have Bridget Rainey, who made huge strides over the summer. And then we're going to get a player back who redshirted last year as a pitcher, Valerie Caff. And then we got a freshman pitcher in from Georgia that we think very highly of. In addition to another gal that just had huge improvement over the summer, and she didn't pitch at all last year, a couple innings here and there. So we're deep on the mound, and I think we're strong and experienced on the mound, and then we have a tremendous amount of our offense back from last year. And then our freshman class, you know, there we can already tell that those kids are going to make a big difference. So I think, like any team, you know, they're going to look to how healthy are you on opening day. You know, we've still got several question marks in terms of, you know, rehabilitation over the fall, summer and fall. If those kids are back and healthy and playing, I really, really like us a lot.
Coach, before last season you came on the show, we broke down your entire roster. One of the players that I was really interested to see how she would do was, as you know, Ebony Eccles. She had a very good season, top 25 finalist for NFCA Freshman of the Year. Your expectations, what have you talked to her about coming into her sophomore season?
Well, I'll tell you what, that kid's just, she's a stud. I mean, she is such a great player. She led the nation almost all year in triples. And I'll tell you this, Ebony Eccles broke her thumb like weekend one or two. She played hurt the entire season. She, like so many freshmen, I mean, the breaking of the thumb, you know, was just a freak accident. But she also had a non-throwing shoulder issue, and that hampered her all year. So she did all that being pretty banged up. So if Ebony Eccles is healthy, I think that kid is going to be, you know, certainly all Big Ten, and I think has an opportunity, you know, to be an All-American. I really do. She's that exciting of a player. There just are not that many kids that are that explosive offensively. She missed most of the fall with, you know, rehabilitating her shoulder. Her thumb is healed, which is good. So I think, you know, but Eb's real little, you know, and when you sign these little ones and they run into the big ones, you know, physics tells us the little ones break. So, you know, hopefully she can stay, and she plays like she's big, though. I mean, the kid has got, she plays like she's, you know, 6'4". She doesn't back down from anything. Goes in hard, goes into the stands to catch balls kind of idea. So if we can keep her healthy, I mean, the sky's the limit for that kid.
Coach, going back to having a successful head coach, you also have to have a very strong, solid core behind you. And you went out, picked up Ashley Chastain to come in. This will be her first season up there with Michigan State. What drew you to Coach Chastain to bring her up there for you?
Well, I was lucky. I've known of Ashley for years. I know who she played for, so I know the coaching tree she came off of and what she was taught. Then I was also aware of just how mature beyond her years that she was through the NFCA. Networking through the coaching association, you know, it was very apparent that she was a rising star in a lot of categories, not just character, which is the most important thing to me, but just her skill set and what I thought she could bring to us. You know, I felt really good about the table being set here for her and that she being able to come in and really put us over the top. So I've known about her. You know, people think that, you know, coaching, it's a lot of networking and who you know and who you keep your eye on, and you're always sort of, you know, planning and making sure you're always in a position to attract great candidates. And, you know, the other thing is she was working for a good friend of mine at College of Charleston who had been in the Big Ten for years. And so I just was very sure about, you know, who her mentors were, the kind of people that had helped her develop. And so then I was rock solid knowing that this was the perfect person for our program.
Coach, it's been great having you on the show today with us. Any last comments you have just reflecting on the past 28 seasons and looking forward to hopefully many, many more?
Well, I will say that it's incredibly humbling, and I want to share this with so many people who, you know, really are deserving. And it's going to be an awesome event, and I think our sport is still ripe for a lot of growth, and I'm looking forward to the future, you know, and see what it holds.
Well, Coach, we look forward to hopefully being down there and being able to cover your induction into the NFC Hall of Fame a week from this Friday, December 9th. Again, congratulations and all the best in the future.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Jared.
This has been TCRS, the Coach Rogue Show. Until next time, later times, everybody.